Give me like a hint on.
You're getting nervous.
No, I'm not nervous. I'm gonna have fun because I don't hold anything back.
Okay. So, well, let's see.
Let's see.
You don't know what I have to ask.
I will love to share.
Okay. It's nothing too personal.
That's okay. I'll probably be more personal than you want.
Okay. That's great. Well, I wanted to say this is my first time interviewing someone, so thanks a lot. Appreciate it. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, do you remember the first person you ever interviewed?
The first person? Yes, I do. Oh, my gosh. The first person that I interviewed was Maria Grace, Dr. Maria Grace. She was a friend of mine. And I had communicated with her a while back. Oh, maybe I was searching around for different people who had different email newsletters, and I wanted to connect with people because I was doing this silly little 50-second quick fix that was once a week. It was a 50-second video. It never was 50 seconds because I could never talk, shorter than 50 seconds. And so I was doing this little video, and I wanted to get the word out, so I sent it out to a bunch of people, and Maria Grace was one of them, and she called me immediately. She's like, what are you doing? And she's Greek, but she's from the U.S., or she lives in the U.S., and she's very, very direct and was really a sweetheart. And she was like, well, what are you doing? Tell me about your online stuff. And so we talked, and we became friends. And so about maybe a year or two later, I don't exactly remember when, I decided to start doing some interviews. And so immediately I thought of Maria as the first person to go to. And her book is called Real Fulfillment, R-E-E-L, Fulfillment. And that book is about how you can use self-development techniques through watching movies. It's a really cool idea.
Wow.
But anyway, I called Maria up and I said, Maria, I want to interview you. She said, well, what does that entail? And I said, we just talk on the phone. She's like, oh, that sounds great. And so I called her up that day and I pressed the record button, and literally I talked a mile a minute. Like, I mean, you like the Micro Machine guy. And if you go back and you see how I talk now in interviews and how I introduce people, and you go back to that interview, you can search on liveawesome.com. You can actually search Maria Grace, and that interview will come up, and you will see, you'll hear the difference in me as an interviewer then and as an interviewer now, and even just as a public figure, it's changed. I've become much more I can't really say more relaxed, but I've become much more calm and much more, I guess, choice with my words. And as I say choice with my words, as I can't think of a word to describe what choice is, but you know what I'm talking about.
Is it confidence? I remember one time you told me that you were a little shy, and I've never seen that come across, but
I was afraid
confidence?
To pick up the phone and call people.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I was afraid about back then. And then I started calling people, and I realized that people wanted to talk. Because people wanted to get their message out there, and I said, well, this is really easy. I said, you know, I don't think anyone ever told me no. The only person who's told me no is Michael Pollan, and that's been like two or three times, and I'm still going to get him,
Oh, you'll get him. I know
you'll
get him.
And the only reason he said no is because, you know, the times that we asked, he was in the middle of his book tour for the New York Times bestseller, was the last one that came out. The name is slipping me right now, but... that's where he was. He just wasn't able to do it. So I mean, that people don't say no when they know that you can get out there and you can send a message. So it's a pretty cool. It was a pretty cool realization for me, and it did give me a little bit more confidence because as we grew, as we were able to get more interviews, and as we were able to get more listeners, then I was really able to go to someone and say, hey, you know, we have listeners. You know, a lot of people don't have that. And so for me, now it was easy to go to people and have that kind of, if you want to call it leverage, be able to say, hey, I can get you in front of this many people, and now we do. And when we do, you know, everyone's really excited about it. You know, I get emails all the time from people who we do interviews with and say, I've never had that much traffic. And, you know, we're really excited about being provide that because we can provide, you know, a good, we can share a good message, and the author or the speaker can be rewarded as well with more people, you know, looking at what they do.
Well, you've definitely found something that you're good at doing, that's for sure. When you were younger, did you know what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be when you grew up? When you were a little kid?
Yeah. I wanted to be a forest ranger.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So that was your main thing? Like, how long did that last?
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to be a forest ranger up until I was going away for college, and my mother sat me down, God bless her, she's still around, but my mother sat me down and said, you know, you should probably consider getting a real job. And I said, well, I don't want to do that. I wanted to go to University of New Hampshire, and I wanted to be a forest ranger. And she had said, you know, that's just not going to happen. And I said, oh, well, all right, well, maybe I'll just go to Marist and I'll take like a film course or something like that. So Anne-Marie and I always joke about it, and I joke about it with my mom too, because I'm always outside, mm-hmm. and I'm always in the woods, and we're always hiking, and we're always like foraging for foods, particularly recently since we've taken a few classes about it. And so now I say I am a forest ranger. I just get, you know, I just don't get paid for it.
That's great. You said that to your mother too?
I tell her that all the time. She feels bad that she kind of squashed my dream, but.
Look at what you're doing, though, Kevin. You're helping so many other people now.
I know. Well, I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to be a forest ranger now, knowing you know what I know now, and getting the feedback that we get every day just from people who are excited about what we're doing and who are sharing stuff on the blog and being part of the community. I mean, that's I can't even begin to think about recreating that. And I don't know if I was a forest ranger, I'd be getting that sort of feedback. I mean, I'd get it from the plants and the earth and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I think that this is definitely a little bit more rewarding for me.
And for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
So
have you ever taken your mother out and, like, given her foods that you foraged for?
You know, this is... Oh, my mother, she's a sweetheart. My mother's the only, and she's going to hate me for saying this, she really hates me when I say this sort of stuff, because she listens to a lot of stuff, but my mother's the only vegan who eats meat about 3 or 4 times a week. So she's really learning, and she's doing a really good job, and you know, we haven't taken her out foraging. We did take her to pick some berries at a local park here. And so, you know, we get out as much as we can. We bring a lot of raw foods to the house, and she actually really loves them. And so she, you know, when she can find the time to prepare some of them, you know, she's ready to do it. It's just she's fairly busy, and so we bring some stuff, and she enjoys it, and my whole family enjoys it. Actually, my brother, you know, has really kind of turned around, and started to eat some greens, and you know, it's been a fun experience with the family, particularly around holidays, you know. My mom always says, you know, what should I make? And we just say, don't make anything. You know, we'll just bring something. You can, you know, make what you want to make, and mm-hmm. we won't get involved with each other's stuff, and we can, you know, you can share ours, and we'll just kind of, you know, hang out. So.
So the family, they all know what you're doing, and they all, do they think you're the crazy one, or do they just? What do they think about what you're doing?
Well, my mother thought I was the crazy one for a while. She had make her sound so bad, but these are just funny stories. I love her. She said to me, actually to Anne-Marie, when we first started our personal training business, she had said something to the tone of, he'll come back to earth one day, and you know, so just you know, just wait for that, you know, get a real job. And so she's, you know, she needs that security, and that's fine, you know. For me, you know, the security is kind of, I feel trapped inside of that security. So now she's actually finally starting to realize, and so she's very excited about it, because she works with the American Cancer Society, and she knows that this message needs to get to the American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. And we've worked a lot with the people in their office, as well as going to different events that the American Cancer Society puts on. And we, you know, some people would say, oh, why are you even bothering with that sort of organization? But that organization has reach, and if we can get in, if they allow us to get in and mm-hmm. spread this kind of message, kind of unchecked, right, mm-hmm. then we're able to reach, you know, a whole group of people that normally wouldn't be reached with this sort of message. So we've actually worked with them now for a little bit, at least locally here in Connecticut, and they've been really happy about it. So she's really excited about it, and she always said, every time we sit down to dinner, she's like, you know, she likes to repeat things. She said, you know, you guys are at the cutting edge of this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like 10 years down the road, like this is going to be normal, and you guys are really going to be in a good position. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And then the next dinner, she's like, you know, you guys are really at the cutting edge. So she's really getting it now. And it's great, because she's applying it in her own life. I mean, she's lost maybe 30 or 40 pounds, you know, has gotten off any sort of medication that she may have taken from time to time, and she feels great. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's really good. You know, if the family can get it, I mean, if you can break through to the family a little bit, I mean, you're you can break through to anyone. I mean, that's the hardest thing to do.
That's great. Well, I know I told you that this was going to be a little bit more personal.
Oh, boy.
So I wanted to ask you about your tattoo.
Cool.
I know. I've seen it. It's really nice. And you said that it was attributed to Joseph Campbell. And I know you're a really big fan of his work. So can you tell me a little bit about his work and your tattoo?
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is a great question. I'm so excited about this interview. Joseph Campbell, like the premier religious studies researcher that our country really, I think, has ever seen. And one of my favorite books of his is The Power of Myth. And The Power of Myth, basically, it's one of those books that I think I've read the most. I think that's the one book that I've read the most. I think I've read it maybe 6 or 7 times. And I've listened to the audio program about, 2 or 3 times. So I've really kind of internalized this book. And basically what he does is in this book, he kind of takes different paradigms of religious thought and of mythological thought.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of breaks them down. And basically the magic of what he does is he notices that they're all kind of the same. Is that each different culture, usually has very similar stories that are very closely related around a certain theme, which is very kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think that we're so different at times, but in reality, if we're all coming up with very similar stories, I mean, one, that's pretty, pretty telling that we're all very similar, but two, I mean, what does that say about there actually being some sort of spiritual being or something like that? I mean, it's pretty powerful. It's pretty powerful stuff. Now, I don't really kind of get into that stuff, but that's his whole take and what I've kind of explored and what I like from what he does. The tattoo is from I kind of forget. I'd have to look at the book because I kind of reference it from time to time, but there's a small chapter in there, and the tattoo is about the cycle of life. And I read the book and I kind of caught this little paragraph, and it talked about this I think, I believe it's an Indian, like an American Indian type, myth or just idea. And what it is it's two snakes, and they're intertwined with each other, and they're each eating each other's tails.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that, life comes from death, and then death brings life, and it's just an entire cycle. And so when I first read that really struck me, and I read it again, and I said, I think when did I get this tattoo? Well, it must have been 10 years ago. So when I read it, it really struck me, and I said, I think I kind of want to have a representation of this, on my body, and I wasn't into natural inks or anything like that then, so. So
I was going to ask that.
Yeah.
Do you think they're harmful?
I don't know. Probably.
So do you think you'd ever get another one?
I would get another one. I would consider using something else that's a little less harmful than that. I have a few ideas for other ones, but I think I like the idea of tattoos. Actually, I think that they're through history, cultures have used tattoos to show status and to represent things, and I think that's really powerful, and I think that's I think it's a neat type of practice, and so I don't know, some people feel really weird about it, but I definitely don't. But so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to represent that on my body as a tattoo, and so I was down in Atlanta, and I had a guy draw it up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I said, that looks good, and we sat down and he did the whole thing, and then I had a tattoo, and it was pretty cool, and it's one of those things. I'm so glad that I got that as compared to anything else, because it truly can be something that I can always look at and say, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So for
mm-hmm.
some reason it just kind of rang out to me, and I said, this is what I want. So that I'm really happy about that, because I know a lot of people who get some interesting tattoos and just don't want them anymore.
Yeah. And it's painful to get them undone, isn't it?
I'm sure it is, yeah.
So let's get back to spirituality. Do you consider yourself a spiritual person?
Very.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Very. When I don't, it always comes back and like kicks me and says, guess what, you're spiritual, if that makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up as a Roman Catholic, and we went to church, I think, because we felt like we had to.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really fond of the Roman Catholic type guilt that, if anyone out there is Roman Catholic, you kind of know what that guilt is. And so it's always this, you know, you shouldn't be doing this and you shouldn't be doing that and you shouldn't be doing that. And so I got my communion, but I was never confirmed with the church because it got to a point where I didn't want to go to the religious schools. The CCD is what they call it, and we used to joke and say it was the Central City Dump. That was like I don't even know what the real acronym stands for, but that's what we used to call it. We'd go on like Tuesday nights, and our parents would drive us all reluctantly, and then we'd all carpool and then talk about how much we hated it on the way back. But the teachers there were very sweet, and you know we probably shouldn't have given them as much of a hard time as we did. But anyway, we stopped going to church maybe right before high school, and just never really revisited it at all. And I didn't really revisit spirituality at all until right after I had realized that I had gone way too deep into partying and really kind of ruining all the relationships around me. And my mother had given me a book called The Seeker's Guide. This is by Elizabeth Lesser. Elizabeth Lesser was one of the founders of the Omega Institute, which is in Rhinebeck, New York, as well as Costa Rica. And I think there's another one, but I'm not exactly sure where that is. And a lot of big-time speakers go up to there, Deepak and Eckhart Tolle and all those other guys. So they're always up there and always hanging out and doing programs up at the Omega Institute. So I got this book, and it really opened up my mind again to the possibility that there was so much more out there than what I was doing. So, I mean, spiritual practice is kind of a daily thing for me. I have to admit that over the last couple months, I've been pretty busy, and I've kind of gotten away from you know, the most, you know, my most peaceful spiritual practice, which is actually running, if that makes any sense
mm-hmm.
to you.
It definitely does. Mm-hmm.
Running for me is my time when everything else goes away, and it allows me to channel anything that I need to channel. And usually at the end of a good run, I will hop into the car just with so much vigor and so much energy and so many clean thoughts that, you know, I really should be doing it more as I'm talking about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me, that's kind of my spiritual practice. It's something that I do, you know, regularly, particularly spring, summer, and fall. And it's something that I am it just absolutely opens up my mind. And maybe it's the nature. Maybe it's being connected. Maybe it's just the clearing of you know, physical energy or the physical body that needs to happen while I'm running. But there's something very spiritual about that. And you know, some people might say, oh, you have to go to a place to meditate to be spiritual, or you have to go to church, or you have to do this. I don't really think so. I think spirituality is just reconnecting yourself with your being and with the earth, and relaxing and not thinking, you know, and not running ideas through your head all the time. And while I'm running, I'll run ideas through my head, but they just kind of, they come and they go, and there's no process to it. And that's a really
it's
important
moving meditation that you're doing when you're driving.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. It's moving meditation.
I can't imagine you ever actually meditating after seeing you during a relaxing type yoga session with Anne Marie. You couldn't even keep your fingers still, Kevin.
I can't do it. I look at people who do it and I say, wow, you are amazing, because I can't do it. I will sit down for a second and suddenly, you know, there's something else running through my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I got to do this, or, you know, I got to do that, I got to do that. And my mother's the same way. You know, she can't sit down and meditate. She's tried it, and she's funny when she tells me. She's like, you know, I sit down, and literally within like 5 seconds, I'm already thinking about like what's on the grocery list. And I'm the same way. You know, I sit down to meditate. I try to cross my legs and sit down, and like within, you know, like even at like a yoga class, within like 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm uncomfortable. My back hurts. You know, I'm just like, this, I don't like doing this. You know, let's go out of here.
When I saw you with that yoga session, you were tapping your fingers, playing with the grass.
I know. I know. I can't sit still.
Yeah, you're just a mover, that's all.
I know. I'm pacing now.
So I have some other questions for you. What's a typical day like for you? Do you have a routine or anything you follow?
Yeah. So a typical day, well, a typical day now or a typical day like 6 months ago?
Now.
All right, cool.
Well, give me both.
Okay,
what's
cool.
The difference? What has changed?
The difference is that our business has exploded
mm-hmm.
in a good way. And so we're really kind of trying to pick up the pieces. So we have hired people to help us do the things that we just can't do anymore. We've hired people to do customer support. We were really lacking the customer support because we weren't able to be there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have someone literally almost full-time handling all the customer support so they can get back to everyone, which is really important to me because I know when I write into someone, I don't hear back from them within like 24 to 48 hours. I get a little upset. So that's something that we're really working on, and you know web stuff too. You know, getting me out of the picture in terms of the day-to-day stuff, and thinking about how we can actually reach and help more people. So that whole in the last 6 months too. I mean, I've dealt with this candida issue. So I mean, it's been a whole interesting sort mm-hmm. of deal. But before the 6 months, my daily routine was I would get up, I would have a smoothie in the morning. And I would drink a lot of water, so I would drink maybe like 2 glasses of water in the morning. I would take some morning supplements,
mm-hmm.
and you know digestive enzymes, not digestive enzymes in the morning, but systemic enzymes, a little bit of a marine phytoplankton. What else? Let's see. That's usually about it. You know, there's a few more that every once in a while I'll toss in. Green powder, and so that's what I would do in the morning. And then I would sit down and I would look through, you know, I would kind of tackle like the two or three biggest things that I had to do for the day. Because I knew that if I got those done, then I could kind of, you know, relax a little bit towards the afternoon. And
mm-hmm.
then usually in the afternoon, what I would do is I would go for a run. I would come back. I would finish up some of the work, eat dinner. And then depending on the day or what we do, I would either, you know, hang out with Anne-Marie or we do a little bit more work. I mean, I do a lot of work, and it's one thing that I know is a little bit unbalanced in my lifestyle, particularly now. So fast forward 6 months, I haven't been doing the running because when I'm eating such a low sugar diet, because I'm not really eating any sugar right now,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm still making sure that this candida doesn't come back, because it's something that is I do not want to come back. When I eat this low sugar diet, it's very hard for me to do high intensity exercise or even cardiovascular exercise, because what happens is it drops my blood sugar, and because I'm a fast oxidizer, because I burn sugar so quickly, you know, I get down into a low where I'm grumpy, I get very hot, very kind of heated, and it's really not a good formula, and I really crave sugars. So
mm-hmm.
what I've been doing is a little bit more relaxing type exercise. Nothing really intense, maybe doing some push-ups and some pull-ups and some weight training and that sort of thing. And I've been spending a lot of time putting together systems. So I've been spending a lot of time working at the computer, which is just not good. And I know it's not good, and that's a good thing, because I know that we'll be getting out of it very soon, because we'll be passing that along. So I've been spending a lot of time putting together systems so I can pass off everything to the people who we've put into place on our team who can really get it done.
A lot of people might not know what you're talking about when you say creating your systems.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, but maybe you want to explain that a little bit.
Yeah, well when I really believe that in order to make sure that everyone works well together, you know, there needs to be systems, and systems in place for anything. So just like here's a perfect example. If you were to get a toy for Christmas or a new kind of thing that you had to assemble, like a desk, well, if you don't have the instructions on how to do it, I mean, you know, you might end up with a table instead of a desk, or, you know, I don't, who knows, you might just assemble the desk upside down, or the toy might not work. And so I truly believe that if you can give a roadmap to someone on how to do it, then it eliminates, their questioning, because they know exactly how to do it. It eliminates your stress as to whether or not someone's doing it right, because if they're following your system, they're going to do it exactly how you would want them to do it. And
mm-hmm.
so everyone really kind of benefits from that. So that's what we've been doing. We've been putting together those systems, everything from, you know, how to handle customer support to how to, put together a certain web page to, you know, how to review books for health book summaries that I'm working on with Mike Adams. And, you know, just all these systems put together into a place where, where, you know, everyone can access them and anyone can do it. And it's actually saved us a lot of time, you know, if we've had turnover, because it allows, you know, someone to actually pick up right where the other person left off. So that's what we've been doing. And it's a lot, because I've been doing a lot of work. And so I look at all the work that I do, and literally what I've been doing now is I have this program called Camtasia, which is a screen capture program. And I literally just talk to the computer and explain what I'm doing, record it, and then upload it. And so now we have a video archive of all these things that I do. So we can find, you know, when we find someone to replace, you know, that work from me, then they'll be able to handle it and do it very efficiently.
That's clever.
Yeah.
Really clever. Tell us about yourself. What would somebody be shocked to find out about you?
What would someone be shocked to find out about me?
Mm-hmm.
What would someone be shocked? This is a good question. Let me think about this one. I want to make sure that, mm-hmm. that I get something that's really shocking. What would someone be shocked to find out about me? Well, I started smoking cigarettes and drinking when I was in ninth grade.
You did?
Yeah. So I spent my entire high school and college, you know, just partying and, you know, doing things that you know, I don't even need to recount. And so, you know, I started at a very early age. And for me, that was kind of, you know, my lifestyle for a long time. And
that's
I was still able to accomplish things, which is very weird. You know, I was still able to do, you know, I was still able to get good grades and maintain, you know, really good friendships and that sort of stuff until towards the end of college, and it started to disintegrate a little bit. But, you know, that's kind of something that's probably a little bit shocking. I was not always, I didn't grow up in a family where, you know, there was, you know, everyone was fed organic food and, you know, we were all, you know, I don't even know. I mean, it wasn't the prettiest of all situations. So I guess that's pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably, there might be more shocking things, but that's
so you've changed your life a lot then.
Oh yeah.
From when you were younger.
Well, that's why I think I have the ability and the confidence to be able to help people. So my challenge wasn't a health problem. You know, my challenge was an addiction problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tend to think that a lot of health problems come from addiction.
So do you have any current addictions to anything?
Well, cashews.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting over it. and I would say I probably work a little too much. So mm-hmm. those are the two things that I can identify in my life now that I probably do a little too much of. And knowing what addictive behavior is, at least, the cashews are kind of over now. That was actually probably about a month ago, or maybe a little bit less, maybe about 3 weeks. I'm pretty much good on those. But the work is something that I know that I need to kind of step back a little bit from, because I am working way too much. And so it's one of those things that I know the techniques to stop,
mm-hmm.
and I can do them fairly easily. And it's just a matter of, like any sort of addiction, you have to really, really want to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have to find pain enough to be able to create that leverage. And in this case, you know, I'm kind of tired of being working all the time. So it's starting to get to that point where the leverage is there. And, you know, I think probably about towards, I would say that probably about January, February-ish, 2009, where, you know, everything's cleared up. So I'm really excited about that. So this is one of those things that it's such a passion of mine. It's hard to, you know, there's a really fine line between addiction and passion, you know,
mm-hmm.
So or hobby and addiction. So I know that this is benefiting people, so I wouldn't say that this is a negative addiction. But at the same time, you know, I know it's not healthy to be sitting in front of the computer and working, you know, the hours that I do.
Especially when you're not doing things you love, like playing music and jogging as much as you want.
Right. Absolutely.
So what kind of personal development books have you been reading lately?
Ooh. Well, reading lately,
mm-hmm.
I've been listening to a lot of programs lately.
Mm-hmm.
I really prefer listening to to reading,
mm-hmm.
Because I can kind of do it passively, so I don't actually have to be, you know, sitting down and reading. I can be, you know, doing something on the web, you know, putting together a web page or something like that, and I can listen to audio programs because the web stuff is pretty mindless. And so that's kind of what I do, or when I'm driving. I always have something in my program. Right now, I'm kind of into some of the marketing stuff. I've been listening to a lot of marketing stuff recently. It's you know, if you want to learn how to do something, you have to learn how to market yourself doing it. If you want to make a living on how to do something you love, you have to learn how to market it. That's what I meant to say.
Mm-hmm.
So let me say it again. If you want to do something that you love, and you want it to be sustainable, you have to learn how to market it. You have to learn how to get it. It doesn't mean you have to go out there and use all these sleazy techniques or anything like that, because a lot of people feel that way. It just means that you have to have in your mind a picture of you know, how the channels are all going to pan out in order for you to get your message out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to learn a lot of marketing. And recently I've been reading things by Ryan Lee, who's a fitness marketer. Craig Ballantyne, who's also a fitness marketer, because I came from fitness, so I know these guys. And they put out a lot of good stuff. And Ryan Lee's actually been a personal mentor of mine, and he's taught me a lot of good things. And he's got a really good heart about it, so I really feel good, you know, taking in his message. And so I've just been, I'm on monthly newsletters. I get monthly CDs from them that they send, and I just listen to them, you know, whenever I get a chance in the car, or, you know, my iPod or something like that. And I literally flood my mind with this sort of stuff. And, you know, 99% of it goes out the other end, and that 1% sticks. I take action on it, and then I move forward. And that's kind of my process on learning all this stuff, is just take 1% of it, take one thing, apply it, and then move on. And you're going to be all right, because there's so much information out there.
Yeah, that's powerful. So you said they were mentors. Do you have other individuals who have shaped your life?
Sure. My mother's friend now, but when we were young, my mother was a flight attendant, and she had people come in to take care of us when she was away. And so it came to the point where, you know, a few women didn't work out. You know, one of them like brought home a guy, you know, like from the bar, and like, you know, she tells me another one was stealing food from us, like, you know, this, she tells us these stories, and they're all pretty funny. But she brought one woman to our house once, and I remember very clearly she was this blonde-haired Swedish woman. She was a little bit portly. I wouldn't say, you know, fat, but just a little bit, you know, larger. And she had a very strong kind of Swedish accent. And her name was Lisa. And Lisa, throughout, you know, some of my formative years, she was a very strong influence on my thought philosophy and my beliefs, because she was always an outdoors type person. So, like, literally, we could not watch TV when she was around. She would call it the boob tube. She said, you can't watch the boob tube. It's time to go outside. So she'd take us to parks. You know, we'd go hiking. We'd play outside. She would make fresh foods, you know, very fresh organic type foods. And so I really learned a lot from her in the times when my mother was away. And as well, you know, afterwards, you know, I would spend time with her outside of, you know, as I was growing up. I went to Sweden to visit her with a friend of mine. We when she was here recently, Amory and I went down to Harlem to visit her. And so she's really had, you know, a nice influence on my life as a mentor, just the kind of the natural outdoors type approach that, you know, was kind of missing in my family. My mother's like scared of bees, you know, scared of like bugs. And, you know, it's like she's the type of person who would sit outside. I remember this very clearly. She'd sit outside with her friends, you know, sun tanning, but she'd have like a fly swatter next to her, you know, like, that kind of thing. She's also allergic to bees, in her defense.
Uh-huh.
But you know what I mean. So this is kind of an opposite of where I grew up. And since then, you know, this is when I was younger. Since then, my mother's become very connected to nature, and so she's definitely kind of turned around as well. But Lisa's definitely been a big influence in my life, and she's very strong. I mean, very strong. woman. She was always able, this is what is very, she has a very bohemian type lifestyle, and she was always able to do what she wanted. And that really kind of impressed me, because, you know, if she didn't have any money, you know, she could always find a way to get what she wanted and get out there and make it happen. So I think that I've kind of taken some of that, and I kind of, you know, I still stress about money, but I still have this, you know, underlying belief that it'll be able to be done, and it will happen, and everything will be fine. So, and I have the confidence that it will happen. So it's something that runs very strong in me. So I think that's from her influence.
She sounds like a remarkable person.
Oh, she's pretty cool. Yeah,
that'd be fun to interview her on a video someday.
Oh, you know what? A couple years ago, we planned to do a retreat. She had opened up a bed and breakfast on the high coast of Sweden. And so we might revisit that idea again because she's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So that's a person who inspired you and shaped your life. What about? I know you're really into books. So what kind of books were important to you that you feel helped shape who you are?
Definitely Joseph Campbell, Power of Myth.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely that book. Psycho-Cybernetics.
Mm-hmm.
By Maxwell Maltz, which is the new Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. It's edited by Dan Kennedy. That's definitely a big influential book in my life. I would say The Seeker's Guide by Elizabeth Lesser. Not a very popular book, but it's a very good one. Let's see what else. You know, this doesn't really influence my life, when I was taking my master's degree, I didn't finish my master's degree, but when I was getting it, I read a lot of, you know, kind of non-fiction sort of stuff, and I really liked Hemingway. Hemingway, his autobiography, what is the name of that book? Oh, my gosh, I can't think of, A Movable Feast. I think I really like that book. And so that was kind of an influential book. I like reading about, you know, figures like that. I love reading. There's a book called it's called Entrepreneurial Genius, and the guy's name is Gene Landrum, and it's Entrepreneurial Genius. And this book highlights basically, I think maybe 12, 15 of the world's, you know, most incredible entrepreneurs. And this, I love reading this stuff because, you know, I look at it and I say, if these people can do it, I say, why can't I? I mean, he kind of captures the lives of like Jeff Bezos from Amazon.com and Mark Cuban from HDNet, and I mean, who else is on this list? I mean, Ford, Getty, you know, Chanel. I mean, all these people, you know, just amazing people. Buckminster Fuller, you know, incredible people, and he just kind of tells about their lives. And I thought this book was really, Richard Branson, I thought that this book was really, really an important book to read and kind of get an inspiration from and say, you know, these are just normal people. These are just everyday people who just went out there and had the guts to actually make something happen and kind of put their ego aside. I think our ego gets in the way in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I definitely see it in any sort of community. You know, you see it when people are, and you know, since we're in the diet community and the raw food and the health community, we see it in the health where people, you know, preach that their diet is the right thing, and
right.
It's such an ego thing.
Yeah.
You know, they'll preach that their diet is the right thing to the point where they hurt other people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is that all about? It's ridiculous. I mean, we have to take the ego out of it. And say, look, you know, do what you really feel is going to work, and know that internally that you have the capability to be able to do it. And so, and that message is so much more empowering than, you know, you have to eat 3 servings of fruit and then 2 servings of vegetables and this amount of protein and this supplement. I mean, it's really, you know, it's kind of. That kind of gets me a little fired up, but I won't
mm-hmm.
go there. I'd rather go back to the books. But so reading books like that really, really, really inspire me. And so I do like reading those, and I like listening to them or whatever. So those are a few of the most inspirational books.
I think it says a lot about you, too, that you purposely surround yourself with inspiring people and books. And so I think that might be something that helps you continue going on with what you're interested in.
I have to.
A lot of people don't keep themselves inspired.
I know. And the thing is this, is that, you know, they'll say that your income level or whatever is related to your five closest friends and all that other sort of stuff. And whether it's income level or happiness level or whatever that, I think it all translates the same. And recently I've kind of made a shift in some of my friendships. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting because I've had to let go of a few friendships that were really kind of holding me back. And I didn't know that they were holding me back until I let go of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that they were because that energy was still there. The energy was still, kind of dark and kind of still surrounding me. And so once I did, new friendships opened. So, every time, life does something like that, and you think that it's scary to, let go of things like that,
mm-hmm.
doors always open up. And so I kind of... even now, as I say, I'm telling you that I sometimes stress about money and I'm worried about, we have these new employees and we have to pay these people and it's so crazy to have to do that sort of stuff. And what if they're going to do the job right? And, it always works out. And so I don't know. I guess I just shouldn't even have to stress about that. And maybe that's a message that I can teach other people is that maybe you don't have to stress out about it. Maybe it's everything's meant to happen and in the order that it does and just relax about it and enjoy the ride. And of course you need to do stuff. You can't just kind of sit back and then hope,
Right.
The love of your life shows up at the door and all this sort
mm-hmm.
of stuff. Now it might, but you need to take the appropriate actions to actually make it happen.
Right.
That's where, my philosophy kind of differs a little bit with The Secret. I mean, if you're not taking action, you might as well, not even watch The Secret or believe this stuff because you're just going to get frustrated. So
are you a big fan of The Secret?
Sure. I have to admit, I've never watched the full thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably watched about 40 minutes of it. I'm like, I get it. So for me, I've listened to Esther and Jerry Hicks for a while, and I've listened to that. The Law of Attraction stuff, and I've read Jack Canfield's books and Bob Proctor and all the people who are in The Secret. So I've got that at all different levels for a while now, and so it's great. I mean, The Secret introduced that sort of mindset, the mindset that many successful people have, to a whole group of people who would never have seen it before, and that's genius. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so many, it's so amazing that there are copycats, people who are coming out with so many different things now to attempt to do the same thing. And I hope that it can happen again, that something new, like maybe raw food or something else can come out and touch people so much like The Secret have. I mean, even my mom watched The Secret. My brother watched The Secret. I mean, it's crazy. It's amazing.
I read a book years ago, Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. I don't know how to say her name. Gawain.
Okay.
And, it's very similar to The Secret.
Yeah.
Very similar, but it was written before.
Oh, this is The Secret's old stuff. I mean, look at Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. I mean, this is The Secret. I mean, if you read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, he talks about The Secret,
mm-hmm.
and that's what this is. I mean, so this is not new stuff. It just happened to hit just at the right time, in the right place. The right people were contacted. The right action was taken, and it just exploded, which is amazing. It's an incredible feat, and so it's so good that information is out there because it's created abundance for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about all the people now who teach about the Law of Attraction.
Right.
How mm-hmm. cool is that?
Yeah.
I mean, just amazing. Some people knock it. I'm like, wow. Get a life. I don't know.
Well, it's not going to work for them, of course.
It's not.
According to The Secret, right?
I'm getting more and more direct.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know what to do about it because sometimes I don't like to offend people. I'm not direct to offend people, but sometimes my directness might offend people. And I'm getting to the point where I just want to tell it like I feel it is,
mm-hmm.
speak my truth, and if people want to listen, they can listen. If they don't, that's cool, too.
It takes too much energy to hold it back, doesn't it?
It
hold
does.
Back what you really want to say. It takes too
it
much
does.
Energy.
It does.
Yeah. Well, Well, I have two more questions that Jim wanted me to ask you, and then I have one more of my own.
Great.
Jim wanted to know, do you think you could do more push-ups than Gabriel Cousins, who recently did, I think, 600 in a row on his 60th birthday?
Dude, I can't do 600 push-ups in a row. So
okay.
I would challenge Gabriel Cousins to a push-up contest.
You would? You would or you would not?
What's that? I don't know. I don't think I would. 600 push-ups, I mean, I don't know. I
can't. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
It's very impressive. I can do 100 in a row, you know, but 600, holy cow. I want to know. Is Gabriel going all the way down? That's what I want to know. I want to see a video.
Uh-huh.
I want to see the form, just one. I 600 push-ups, if he does it or not, you know, that's he's an amazing man. I love the guy. He's such a sweetheart. 600 push-ups, awesome. I don't want him to prove 600 push-ups or not. I just want to know the form. That's all. I want to know the form.
So you'll be even more impressed if he does go all the way down, right?
Oh, I'd be. Well, he was a football player, so you know he's got it in him. He definitely has it in him. And I'm not doubting the fact that he did 600 push-ups at all. But I'm just joking around. I want to see the form.
That's funny. And Jim asks a funny question. He said there's a ginormous animal at your wedding in one of the pictures he saw on the Inner Circle. And he wants to know, what is that animal? He sees its head. He wants to know, is it a camel or something? And what's
the
story there? It's a donkey.
Yep. It's a donkey. When we scheduled our wedding, we had no idea where the place was going to be. We searched all along the eastern seaboard. And so finally we were in the gym store because there's a woman who we had become friends with. She had referred us clients, and we had referred people to her to buy gym equipment. And she said, you know what, my friends got married up at this place in Terryville, Connecticut. And so she said, there was like goats and sheep and donkeys and horses. I'm like, let's go. So Anne-Marie and I got in the car like the next day. We called the place up, got in the car and went up there. And what they had done is they had renovated this barn. And it literally was kind of like a big open house with these, you know, nice windows and all this sort of stuff. And so we walked in, and like Anne-Marie instantly like started crying. And I was like, thank goodness.
Aww.
Because we had not seen a place that had had any sort of reaction like that. And so we just said, this place is awesome. So we visited with the donkey, and I knew that I would see the donkey again on the wedding day, so I made sure that I gave the donkey a little bit of love, you know.
Aww.
We shared some grass.
That's
not
sweet.
Like actual grass.
Glad to clarify.
Actually, from
that.
The picture, if you do look at the picture, it might look like we shared some grass. But no, we shared some grass that, you know, he ate from when I was holding the grass from my mouth, and we got a picture of it.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. So that
was... Okay, my final question for you.
Yes.
What's your biggest wish, Kevin?
Wow, what is my biggest wish?
Mm-hmm.
I would like people to feel the energy that I feel on a daily basis, because it's amazing. And that's kind of what my mission is to be able to help people free up some of the energy blockages that they have. And those manifest at a whole bunch of different levels, because I had it before. So this energy that I have right now,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have it all the time. And particularly when it got pretty dark towards you know, right after college, I didn't have this type of energy. The life force was kind of gone. And so that's what I would like to do. So I know I can sense, I have this ability to sense other people's I don't know. I sense it, and it's something that I kind of take for granted, because I don't realize that some people don't have it,
mm-hmm.
and it's not that they won't ever get it. It's just that they may not have come in tune with it. But because I've been in a position that's been fairly dark, you know, I can kind of sense other people's emotions and other people's kind of situations. And so if I can reach out to more people and help them kind of get out of that darkness, then I feel really fulfilled. And
mm-hmm.
so that's kind of what my wish is, that I can be able to reach more and more people with that message, or just the presence, or just the energy, or just being around, and kind of like brush that along to people, because it actually is an energy that can transfer.
Mm-hmm.
the dark energy can transfer too, so you know you have to be careful about that. But
right.
But it's just kind of, you can kind of like I don't know if you want to get like you know metaphorical, it's almost like superhero energy, you know, like
mm-hmm.
like you know you see like the sword and it like you know there's like a good guy and a bad guy, or like you know Star Wars, and like the blue lightsaber or white lightsaber is good and then Darth Vader's is red, you know, it's kind of like
mm-hmm.
that energy where you know you can actually transfer it, and so it's something that I really like to do, and I try to do it with everything that I do, and you know every call I set an intention of you know what I want to do and you know how I want to influence and you know how what the intention or the outcome of the particular call is, and so it's something that's very intentional. It's something that is if that wish I think that wish is starting to come true. So I'm really excited about that. So it's just being able to continue to fulfill that wish. So imagine if your wishes could come true every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's really kind of an amazing thing to think about. And if you're out there listening, think about what your wish is and imagine if that could come true every day. And if you continue imagining it coming true every day, one day it might actually come true. And then the next day, maybe it won't. Next day, maybe it won't. But then the next day after that, it might again. And then you might actually feel that you're starting to pick up some momentum and actually starting to feel that maybe you are living where you're supposed to be living, and you're living in the flow, and you're fulfilling your highest and best power, and you know the sky's the limit from there.
It's beautiful, Kevin. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thanks for your time too. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And